By 3 o'clock this afternoon, The Rock was on a flight. By 6:45, he arrived here, Logan Airport. By 7 p.m., The Rock was running into a security guard. The security guard says, "Yo, Rock, you're a wicked pisser." I said, "Thank you, thank you. You know, The Rock's got great aim." By 7:30, The Rock was driving past one of his favorite places to eat in town, the North End. Smelling the Italian food from a mile away. The Rock wanted to stop, couldn't stop, won't stop, was not gonna stop, ain't gonna stop until this moment right here. Until this very moment right here, November 14, 2011, The Rock standing in the middle of this ring for the right, the honor, the privilege to say, "Finally, The Rock has come back to Boston!"
You're listening to Smack Talk Radio Live, your source for news, views, and opinions on everything wrestling, from the big leagues to the local scene. Now, here's James McDonald and Corey Callahan.
Well, in the words of the great culinary chef, Emeril Lagasse, bam! Let's kick this up a notch. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another Thursday edition of Smack Talk Radio Live. My name is Corey Callahan, and I'm joined in the Vancouver Smack Talk studios with none other than the living legend himself, James McDonald.
Ooh, yeah!
James, Survivor Series, 3 days away. You pumped?
Well, to be honest with you, Corey, not as pumped as I should be, but I definitely won't miss it. Like I said, The Rock alone is enough to make me tune in, and I think a lot of other people feel the same way. Now, speaking of Survivor Series, we're going to run down the entire show in our Tale of the Tape segment, and in tonight's top five, none other than the five best Survivor Series moments.
We'll also have all the latest happening around the industry in our post-to-post report, and tonight, we get to chat with someone who's becoming a prominent figurehead for the Canadian wrestling scene, host of both the radio and TV show Aftermath. We welcome to the program none other than Arta Ocal.
And in our local wrestling scene tonight, we're finally going international as we talk to Jeff Manning, owner and promoter of the West Coast Wrestling Connection, based out of Salem, Oregon.
As always, you can check out www.smacktalkradiolive.com or join in on facebook.com/smacktalkradio.
Right now, though, let's tornado DDT things off with the Tale of the Tape.
It's time for the Tale of the Tape.
It's Thursday evening, Smack Talk Radio Live back on the air. James, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing real good, buddy. I'm really excited about tonight's action-packed show.
Should be good. It's snowing outside. Can you believe it?
I was just going to mention that. You know, it's not officially winter yet, but as I look out the windows of the Smack Talk studios, you could have fooled me, as everything is blanketed in about half a foot of snow right now.
My dog was going crazy earlier.
Oh, I bet he loves it.
Well, before we get going, I want to make sure everyone is aware what exactly our show is all about. So, James, like always, why don't you give everyone a quick rundown of what the difference between a Thursday episode of Smack Talk Radio Live is and a Monday SRL on a Monday night?
Well, tonight's show, our Thursday show, we just put a little bit more pre-production into it, a little bit of preparation, and Monday is just our weekly kind of review of Monday Night Raw. We watch the show, we enter the studios, we hit the mics, and we just go at it.
Just live, off the cuff.
Off the cuff, live, uncut.
Mm-hmm. And tonight, we have a big show because we have very good interviews lined up. Arta Ocal, host of Aftermath, as well as owner and promoter of the West Coast Wrestling Connection, Jeff Manning. He's based out of Salem, Oregon. This is the first time the local wrestling scene has gone outside the Metro Vancouver area, I guess you could say.
Kind of an oxymoron, I guess.
Yeah,
eh?
We're going international in our local wrestling scene.
Yeah.
Before we get going as well, I also want to remind everyone that you can download our podcast at www.smacktalkradiolive.com. And we're also encouraging everyone to like the page at facebook.com/smacktalkradio. That's sort of where we're keeping the community active.
Right.
We're asking our poll questions. We're asking for viewer comments. Anything you want to throw up about our show, facebook.com/smacktalkradio is the answer.
And don't forget about our email address onair@smacktalkradiolive.com. If you have any comments, questions, opinions, shoot us an email. If it's any good, we'll throw it on the air.
Now, we did mention this on Monday, James, but I'm just so damn excited about it, I gotta mention it again. You and I have some big news because it is official. We are on the road to WrestleMania.
That's right.
In more ways than one, because not only are we excited for WrestleMania, like the casual fan, but we are going to Miami, going to watch WrestleMania.
It's going to be good. We got big things planned, everybody, so just keep your ear to Smack Talk Radio Live. We are on our way to Miami this year for WrestleMania 28, and yeah, I'm excited.
The plan is for you and I to broadcast live from Miami while we're there, and who knows where those shows are going to take us. I have some very good ideas in my mind on how I'd like those shows to go. I have a feeling we're going to get some fans from all over the world to do some crazy things for us.
It's going to be good, folks. That's all I'm going to say.
If you have any ideas for what you'd like us to do, send us an email. Okay, James, Survivor Series this Sunday, 3 days away. As I asked you in the intro, are you pumped? Like, are you excited at all?
Is it bad that I'm more excited for the Henry Big Show match than I am for the main event tag team match?
Well, maybe. I mean, I'm excited for the Big Show Mark Henry match, but my question with that, as I'll get into later, is how do they top what they did at Vengeance? That's a good question.
Yeah.
But we'll get to the Big Show Mark Henry match a little later. First, why don't we start by talking about, of course, the main event, The Rock, who made his return on Monday, teaming up with John Cena. And they are facing the obvious winners of this match, R-Truth and The Miz.
And at Survivor Series, if my partner's ego gets in the way of the team, well, John Cena bitch-slapped Rocky is going to be trending worldwide.
I am so sick of this.
Excuse my partner. Excuse my partner.
Really? Really? I'm sick of the Rock and Cena show. You guys are trying to make us an afterthought, but you know what? Go ahead, because the last time that happened, I won the main event of WrestleMania. Everybody's talking about the Rock and Cena. Cena and Rock, why not make it a national holiday? Saying never before and never again. When we get done with you two at Survivor Series at Madison Square Garden, it will never be forgotten.
One of the things I have to say about this whole scenario is how good The Miz on the mic is really has been lost in this whole shuffle with The Rock and John Cena. I think he is outstanding on the microphone. And that clip, it's a little long, but the reason why I aired that was because it really was that good.
Oh, I think the Miz's mic skills are the best thing he's got going for him.
It's a shame that those are going to be overshadowed this Sunday when The Rock and John Cena get in the ring together.
Oh, I am just so disgusted with how this whole program has been booked up to this point.
And why would that be?
Because it's... you know who's going to win this match. Like, let's face it. They've made the heels look so weak in these previous 3 weeks on Raw here. And I'm just going to run down, I guess, this feud and how it's got to the point where it's at.
Sure, go ahead.
Now, this whole thing started at last month's pay-per-view, Vengeance, where Cena would face Alberto Del Rio in a last-man-standing match, but would actually lose the match after The Miz and R-Truth would interfere. Now, on the October 24th episode of Raw, after a beating on Cena by Miz and R-Truth, Laurinaitis would come out and tell Cena that he could, you know, choose whoever he wanted as his partner at Survivor Series. And, of course, you know, Cena picks The Rock. Now, the next week on Raw, The Rock would show up via satellite, of course, and he would reluctantly accept Cena's offer because it is what his Twitter fans would want, which, come on now, really? Really?
We'll get into that.
Really? Oh, and also because he wanted Cena to witness him putting boots to asses, which is his new tagline, obviously. Now, later on in that same Raw, later on in the evening, Cena would tap out The Miz with the STF. They'd have a singles match, and Cena would go over. And Cena would then beat down both The Miz and a masked R-Truth standing tall as Raw went off the air. Now, the next week on Raw, he would have a tag match with Zack Ryder, which he was supposed to have 2 weeks previous, but didn't because Ryder was beat up backstage by Awesome Truth. And he would actually lose this match after R-Truth would hold his foot down as Miz was going for the pin, and that kind of looked very weak and botchy to me.
Actually heard they retaped the entire segment.
Oh, did they?
After Raw was over.
Oh, wow. So then maybe it was kind of...
But I don't know. We'll never see that, so...
Yeah. And then, finally, this last week on Raw in Boston, The Rock, of course, showed up personally. He delivered a rock bottom to Mick Foley as he was doing that whole hilarious John Cena, this is your life thing, which, of course, was a play on The Rock's this is your life thing, you know, which happened back, I think, it was 98 or whatever. And anyways, at the conclusion of the show, Rock and Cena would face off against the Awesome Truth, and after they exchanged some verbal barbs, they would then proceed to lay a beating to both the heels, with The Rock kind of one-upping John Cena by... It kind of looked like he grabbed Miz off of Cena's shoulders, right? Cena was going to go for an AA on The Miz, and either Miz reversed it or Rock grabbed him off his shoulders. I didn't quite see what it was. And anyways, he delivered a rock bomb to both guys, went up the ramp, and then did the... you can't see me thing with his hand, and that's where we're at this point.
Stealing the thunder from John Cena, of course.
Yes.
Okay. Now, I have actually a bit of a different outlook on this match Sunday than you do, because I actually think The Miz and R-Truth will pull away with the victory.
Really?
Yeah, because that's the only saving grace that they will have coming out of this. I think that John Cena and The Rock will, they're discrepancies with each other.
So they'll kind of implode type thing.
Exactly. And in the end,
right,
The Miz will follow through with what they said, that they will beat The Rock and Cena on Sunday at Survivor Series, and that will keep them alive after Survivor Series is over.
Right.
Rock and Cena, they will take their story to a whole new level because, you know, they should have won that match, and they didn't because they got their they let their emotions get the best of them, and those two started fighting with each other, thus propelling them into the WrestleMania storyline that is about to unfold.
Mm. Yeah, I could see that happening. Do you think there's going to be like a heel turn or a swerve or anything at the end?
Well, that is an interesting question, because there are rumors that one of these two, Rock or Cena, could turn heel at Survivor Series. It's an interesting dilemma. I don't see it happening personally, but it is a possibility.
I don't know. Just me personally, I'm not very happy with the way that they've booked Miz and R-Truth going into this. I mean, they don't look like a challenge at all, right? And if you're gonna, this is the main event of one of your big four pay-per-views, and it's just, for me, they don't look very good. I mean, you had John Cena beat up Miz and R-Truth himself 3 weeks ago, standing tall at the end of Raw. So, you know, if he can beat them both by himself, what does he need The Rock for?
No, I agree with you. This is the problem with this matchup. I get that it's not about The Miz and R-Truth, and it's about Cena and The Rock. But unfortunately, the guys left to hang to dry in this situation are The Miz and R-Truth, and they have been completely overshadowed. Typically, in a main event, it's about the match. It's not about the tag team that's teaming up together. And that's a bit of an issue that I have. I don't really care. I don't care about the actual match itself at all. There's no stipulation on the line. There's nothing other than everyone is just looking forward to seeing John Cena and The Rock get in the ring together. Again, I don't think you need to throw R-Truth and The Miz into the fire
I don't like that. I want to be interested in the match. I'm not just
exactly.
I'm not going to watch the pay-per-view just to see The Rock in his wrestling tights.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be interested in the match that's going on. And I can't be. Not with the way that it's... I honestly think this has done more harm to Miz and R-Truth's careers than it has helped them.
Absolutely, because it's made them look like a joke.
Yeah, totally.
And rightfully so. I mean, they do. They look like they're going to lose no matter what this Sunday. Now, if I go with my theory saying that they'll win, yes, but they're not really the winners in this situation, no matter what. They can't come out looking like the winners in this situation, no matter how it goes down. because they've been overshadowed by The Rock and Cena. Yeah. This match never should have happened. They should have never advertised The Rock returning to wrestling, first of all. As we've said before, they should have saved it for WrestleMania.
Yeah, I don't think he should have got... Yeah, exactly. He should. It kind of devalues the WrestleMania match a little bit.
And what I've said this on previous shows, what I would have loved to see heading into this Sunday was The Rock turning down Cena's offer to be a tag team, and we head into Sunday not really knowing what the main event is.
Yeah.
That would have been gold.
Or have something like The Miz and R-Truth running around just destroying people, kind of like what the Nexus did last year.
Yeah.
Why couldn't Miz and R-Truth do that and make them look credible and make them look real strong?
Yeah. Now, what did you think about Mick Foley's involvement with Cena and The Rock on Monday?
Well, I thought he played his part well.
Yeah.
I think it was just... I don't know. I can't really see Foley in much more of a kind of a pseudo-comedic role.
Now, they did the This Is Your Life segment where Mick Foley presented John Cena with that. Now, do you think Mick Foley could have been used in a better way than the way they used him?
No, not really. I think he was used in the role that he was brought in for very well, and I think that should be what he's there for.
See, I would have liked to have seen Mick Foley almost get beaten down by Truth and Miz, and that would be a reason for...
That would have been good.
That would be a reason for The Rock to actually hate The Miz and R-Truth, thus wanting to team up with Cena going into Survivor Series.
But that's logical creative writing, Corey.
We can't
have that.
But that, to me, would have been the most sense.
I agree with you. That would have been great. Or just something, right? Like, put Cena and Rock together reluctantly. I don't like the whole Cena coming out and asking Rock to be his partner, number one.
Yeah.
And number two, I don't like the booking of the heels going into this match. They don't look good.
I agree.
You know? And I want to be interested in the match. I really do, but...
I am interested in The Rock's wrestling, in-ring wrestling return. I can't say I'm interested in the match.
You know what? That's the only thing that's really going to... Now, here's a question for you, Corey. What if Rock goes into this match and he looks bad?
Well, that's always a possibility.
Right?
At one point a couple weeks ago, they did have The Miz and R-Truth fly down to meet The Rock wherever he was. I think he was in New Orleans at the time filming for that movie. And they did have them fly down and they were training together. So he probably will have some ring rust, but at the same time, he probably had access to a wrestling ring. He's not going to be as rusty as we may think.
No, I mean, of course not. He's The Rock.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like he hasn't, done this before.
But there's always that possibility. I mean, there's that possibility that he does it at WrestleMania as well. In my opinion, it's probably better to get it out of the way at Survivor Series than it is to WrestleMania.
Yeah, that's a good way of looking at it. But still, I still don't think he should be wrestling until WrestleMania.
No, I think everyone agrees with you. I mean, except for the people who don't understand it and, they just want to see The Rock, right? Those are the ones they're going for in this instance, and we lose, unfortunately.
Man, I can't wait for the atmosphere in Miami, I tell you.
Okay, so before we move on, you're taking The Rock and Cena over Miz and R-Truth.
I got it. I really can't see Miz and R-Truth winning this match unless there's a huge swerve or a heel turn, and debatable.
I'm going opposite of you. Taking Miz and R-Truth due to the complete breakdown of The Rock and Cena as a tag team.
Well, you know what? Knowing my record and calling matches, you're probably going to be right.
Let's move on to the WWE title, I should say. That match, which will feature CM Punk versus the champion, Alberto Del Rio.
I need you to comprehend this. I know you're a little discombobulated right now, but I need you to process what's about to happen to you. What's about to happen to you is I'm going to ask you a question. It's a simple yes or no answer, but I have a feeling that you're going to say yes, because prior to me asking you this question, I'm going to twist you into a pretzel with a move that I like to call the Anaconda Vice. See? Are you with me? Can you hear me? And I'm not going to let go until you say yes or C to giving me my match at Survivor Series.
Can I have a match at Survivor Series?
You have no match, Michael!
Now, here's a match that has been completely forced down our throats. CM Punk versus Alberto Del Rio for the WWE title. Are you looking forward to this match in any way, James?
I think it's going to be... technically, it's going to be a good match.
I think it'll probably steal the show in terms of best wrestling match of the night.
I don't know. I wouldn't go that far. I kind of think that the traditional Survivor Series match is going to steal the show personally, but...
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, are you excited about the story that this match has presented itself with?
Well, it's been presented a little bit better than the main event.
I'm not a big fan of how they put this match together. I mean, you have CM Punk walking out to the ring on a Del... He walks out into the ring. Del Rio is already hurt from a match that he had previously. You know, he's down and out.
That's, yeah, you know, and what? That's my big
gripe.
And
Punk
as well.
Comes out, puts him in a move, and he demands a match and he gets it. Well, if I am any other wrestler in the locker room, why am I not doing that every single Monday?
Exactly. That whole match with Big Show should never have happened in the first place.
Oh, that's a whole other ballgame.
Yeah.
Okay, well, who do you think actually takes it?
I think Del Rio is going to retain.
Wow, that's funny because I am complete opposite. I'm going with Punk.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know. I have this feeling that Creative wants Punk to be chasing. Hmm. And they want to be... And I've heard rumors that Punk's going to be in the WWE title match at... at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
So I have a feeling that he's going to be chasing all the way up to WrestleMania.
Well, the one X factor in this situation as well is we do have Royal Rumble in between all this. And my early pick for the Royal Rumble is CM Punk. So he may not win the title here at Survivor Series, and he may be chasing all the way to WrestleMania. You may be right. But something deep down inside of me thinks that the WWE does not like Alberto Del Rio as champion. I just feel like they're not giving him the time, the spotlight, the mic. You know, they're not giving him the microphone to convince us that he should be champion. He's just not getting that opportunity to prove to us why he has that belt around his waist. And for me, that is partly my reasoning for why I think he will lose to CM Punk on Sunday.
Do you think it has anything to do with Del Rio maybe being one-dimensional, kind of like what Punk was mentioning and what I was mentioning on previous shows?
In what aspect?
Just, he says the same things all the time. His entrance is the exact same. He's not interesting. I'm starting to lose interest in Del Rio.
But would you agree with me when I say that they haven't really given him that opportunity? Or do you think they have given him the opportunity?
Absolutely, they've given him the opportunity. I mean, they've given him the belt. What more opportunity do you want?
But they've never given him a chance to really shine. I mean, he lost cleanly to the Big Show. I mean, it seems like every single week he's just fodder for some other wrestler to get over. He comes out, gets beaten.
I wouldn't agree with you there. Look at the way he squashed Kofi Kingston.
That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about when he's in the ring with Cena or when he's in the ring with Punk. He is second rate to those guys.
I think it goes with the whole one-dimensional thing. I think Del Rio has himself in a box, and he needs to get out of that box. Because when he's in the ring with guys like Cena and when he's in the ring with guys like Punk, he's just, he looks definitely like second fiddle when it comes to mic work.
Yeah.
Right. And again, I think it's just that box that he's in, and he's got to get himself out of that box. I think that has a lot to do with Del Rio himself, now, and not with how Creative's booking him.
Is there anything to read into here when he lost cleanly to the Big Show?
No, I wouldn't think so. That's just poor booking choice, I think, on WWE's part. Personally.
You don't think that's a sign that it's time to get this belt off Del Rio?
No, I don't think so.
No,
I think you know what? They could have set that up. Like we've talked about this on previous shows, they could have set this whole thing up 100 different ways without having him lose the Big Show and look weak. That's just, I don't know, maybe they wanted to make the Big Show look good going into his match with Henry. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but it just, that should have never happened. But quickly, let me run down for you, Corey, how this whole feud came into being. So essentially, this started way back 2 pay-per-views ago with Hell in a Cell. This is when Del Rio beat CM Punk after John Cena was locked out of the cage. And then the next pay-per-view, Vengeance, CM Punk would team with Triple H, and they'd face The Miz and R-Truth, but Kevin Nash would interfere. The next night on Raw, Punk would interrupt Alberto Del Rio, challenge him to a title match, claiming he never got his match after SummerSlam. Laurinaitis would come out, says he's fed up with everything. And then after proposing Punk and Del Rio for the title at Survivor Series, Laurinaitis would tell Punk the only way this would happen would be if Punk publicly declares his respect for him. Punk would then rip into John Laurinaitis. This happened like 4 Raws ago. And, you know, he says, you've done so little in the business to get to where you are. He respects that. Laurinaitis would then claim this wasn't good enough and you'll have to think about the match for another week. Then the next week on Raw, After being disqualified in his match against Mark Henry after Rodriguez interfered, Laurinaitis would then tell Punk that if he could get Del Rio to accept the match, he could have his match at Survivor Series. And then, of course, we were just talking. Big Show would beat Del Rio cleanly, and Punk would run out after, and like you heard in the clip, put him in the Anaconda Vice, essentially forcing Del Rio into this match at Survivor Series. And then last week, Alberto Del Rio got a pin on Punk in their tag match after Punk took a World's Strongest Slam from Mark Henry.
Yeah. And here we are.
And here we are.
It's been an interest. I guess it's been an okay build-up to this match. I mean, when Del Rio came out and said he was done with John Cena, and Punk came out and declared that he was the rightful contender for that WWE Championship, immediately I was thinking, oh, God, this is going to be forced down our throat. And I kind of still do feel that way. But after you just went over the notes there, I'm thinking maybe it has come around. I mean, maybe there has been a bit of a slow progression for this match, and might not be all that bad.
Well, the feud's been going on for a couple months now.
It is one of those matches where we don't know the victor, you know? Like, we really can't predict who will win this match, and that's not a bad thing.
No, that's not a bad thing at all. That means I'm interested in the match. Both guys are credible, and it's more than I can say for the main event tag match. Now, this feud's also been kind of, it's been mixed in with the whole Mark Henry and Big Show thing. They've kind of crossed over on a few episodes of Raw and SmackDown here.
Well, why don't we get into that? Before we get into that, though, you're taking Del Rio?
I am going to take Del Rio.
Taking Punk. Okay, let's get to Big Show and Mark Henry.
It's about the World Heavyweight Championship. You gotta love
this. This is like something out of Transformers. Look, he's just thinking, what else can I do to this monster?
Guys, now what?
Tell me.
Big Show.
What are we seeing here?
Where's Big Show going?
Oh,
and now it's Mark Henry.
Wow.
Playing defense.
Man, I hope this wing is reinforced.
Oh, no. Don't tell me.
If this happened right here, this could be...
Had to throw that in there, James, because if we didn't throw it in now, we might not be able to air it for a really long time because we might not have a reason to. So I wanted to throw that whole clip in there. That was the Big Show and Mark Henry at Vengeance. Now they are facing each other again at Survivor Series.
That's right. Out of all the matches happening at this week's pay-per-view, this has got to be the feud that's been going on the longest. These guys have been going back and forth since before the summertime, actually. Mm-hmm.
And how are you feeling about it?
You know what? This is the match that I'm looking forward to the most.
Okay, well, that's very interesting. It's pretty rare you see you're excited about two big men in a ring. I mean, those are usually very slow-moving matches, you know, very slow-paced. But the story that goes with these two guys is pretty good.
And you know what? Their work rate has been improving week after week after week. Both of these guys' work rate's been improving.
I did think Big Show looked a little gassed a couple weeks ago. He looked very tired.
In that Del Rio match?
Yeah, he looked very tired. That was the one that went way too long, remember?
Way too long, yeah.
I thought he looked very gassed in that. And even now, I don't think the Big Show is in very good shape. But aside from that, I am quite interested in this match. And I really do think these guys will deliver. I just don't really know where they're going to go from collapsing the ring at the last pay-per-view.
That was quite a cool spot.
So?
All right, well, let me run this down for you then real quick. Now, these two have been feuding, like I said, before the summertime. And you remember when Henry was slamming him through tables and throwing him through the walls of cages? That was pretty cool. That was when they were making Mark Henry into... look like a big monster guy back before the summertime, right? So their feud now would intensify in a match at the Money in the Bank pay-per-view, which Mark Henry won. Now, after the match, Mark Henry would legitimately fracture the Big Show's leg with a chair, keeping him out of action for 4 months. Now, after Big Show's return from injury, Henry would deny him multiple times for opportunities at his title, and he'd be eventually granted another match at the Vengeance pay-per-view by SmackDown General Manager Teddy Long. Now, after an incredible match at Vengeance, the ring would implode after a top rope superplex by Mark Henry on the Big Show, which is what we heard in our clip. Now, on the following SmackDown, Show would cut a promo claiming that he and Henry had unfinished business, and for every show that he doesn't get his rematch, he's going to come out and knock out Mark Henry until he does. Now, later on in the evening, Big Show would interfere in Mark Henry's match with Daniel Bryan, hitting him with the knockout punch and teasing Daniel Bryan to cash in his Money in the Bank briefcase kind of before WrestleMania. Mm-hmm. Now, at the end of that show, SmackDown GM Teddy Long would come out and announce the match for Survivor Series between the two. And then the following week on SmackDown, after a little bit more verbal jousting, Henry would have another match with Daniel Bryan, beating him cleanly with the World's Strongest Slam.
So how do you feel this one's going to play out, James? You really think Henry's going to retain in this situation?
I would hope so.
I would hope so as well. I don't see the Big Show actually pulling it off.
I can't see Big Show right now being in the condition that he is in, being a credible world champion.
Mark Henry is on such a roll, it would be an absolute shame to have him just stop dead because of the Big Show.
I think it would be an absolute travesty to take the strap off of Henry before WrestleMania.
I agree. I think he should be world champion all the way into WrestleMania. I mean, here's one thing that we do agree with, and I don't know. Like I said, I don't know where they go from Vengeance. Like, how do you top that? It's going to be very interesting to see. One thing I will admit, on this Monday's Raw that just happened,
right,
I did think the preview that those two gave for their match at Survivor Series was very well done. When those guys were in that little match there, they did really well.
Mm-hmm. Yes, very well.
Don't you think?
Yeah, no, they worked well, very well together.
So I am looking forward to this. I am taking Mark Henry.
You're I'm going to take Mark Henry as well. What would your feelings be on a Mark Henry Daniel Bryan match at WrestleMania?
That's an interesting. I have a feeling that Daniel Bryan will cash in his Money in the Bank before WrestleMania. I don't think Daniel Bryan has progressed to the point that the WWE. I don't think he's progressed as well as they think he was going to. I think you're going to see him cash it in sooner, and I also think that he's going to lose it when he does cash it in. I don't think he's going to win it.
Really?
No, I don't. I do not think the WWE is high on Daniel Bryan.
Well, he'd be the second person, only the second person to lose after cashing in his briefcase. Only Mr. Kennedy, I think, was the other one.
We're running out of time, James. Why don't we quickly get to our next match, and that would be the traditional Survivor Series match, Team Barrett versus Team Orton.
Team Barrett versus Team Orton, that's right. This is the match that I personally think is going to steal the show.
Well,
now, this match, it was put together on the Remembrance Day edition of SmackDown. Now, after defeating Cody Rhodes in a great street fight the previous week, Orton was named the captain of his team. And then Wade Barrett, later on in the same show, would be named captain of his team by Christian after Christian declined the role due to his kayfabe neck injury. Later on in the evening, same evening, Barrett would get a victory over Orton after thumbing him in the eye. So, I don't know, would you call that a clean victory?
No.
Definitely not. And then this past Monday on Raw, Barrett and Orton would have a rematch with their respective teams at their sides. And, of course, this one would eventually be thrown out and degenerate into an all-out brawl. And that's pretty much where we stand at this point.
Now, let's not forget about the late edition, Dolph Ziggler, as it was announced on Monday's Raw, because Christian was hurt on the European tour. So Christian is out. Dolph Ziggler is in. Do you think he's going to have a major impact in this match?
Dolph Ziggler?
Yeah.
Well, I don't think Dolph will be the sole remaining survivor.
No?
No.
I have a feeling he will be. I have a feeling this is one of those instances where it may not have been planned the entire time, but they wanted to throw Dolph in there. They found their opportunity. I have a feeling that Dolph Ziggler will be a major factor in this Survivor Series match.
Oh, well, you know who I think is going to win this match?
Who's that?
Be the sole survivor? I think it's going to be Wade Barrett.
Well, I don't disagree with that either. I don't think Randy Orton's team wins this match. I think it's definitely Team Barrett. They are on the up. You know, they have a lot of guys in that faction or in that group of five that really are on the up. I mean, you got Wade Barrett, you got Cody Rhodes, I mean, Swagger and Hunico, I guess. But Dolph Ziggler as well. I mean, I told you before, I don't understand why Dolph Ziggler is not in the main event. I think he's underrated, and I think this could possibly propel him into a greater spotlight.
Yeah.
Same going for Wade Barrett. Those two are kind of in that same spot right now where they're kind of rebuilding themselves, and this is a perfect opportunity to do that.
I can see that. Okay, Mr. Callahan, quickly make the call. Who's going to be the final two in this match?
I'm going to go with Randy Orton and Dolph Ziggler.
Wow. I'm going to go with two completely different guys. I'm going to go with Wade Barrett and Sheamus.
Really? Interesting. Okay, how about Eve Torres versus Beth Phoenix for the WWE Divas Championship?
Holy smokes, do I even want to talk about this one? Okay, essentially this match was set up on the Halloween edition of Raw when Eve Torres, who was dressed up as Robin, basically won a battle royal, and she became the number one contender to take on Beth Phoenix for her belt.
This is essentially a rematch from Vengeance.
Yeah. So if AI, another interesting thing to note is if Eve wins this match, it'll be her third Divas title.
Do you think she takes it?
You know what? I don't know with this one. You know, it's. I really hope. I'm just so disgusted with the way that they're booking Beth Phoenix and Natalya.
Yeah.
With Natalya losing to Kelly Kelly and Alicia Fox. It's just. It's so wrong.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, I agree.
And last match, apparently, that's going on is going to be Dolph Ziggler versus John Morrison for the United States title.
Was I wrong earlier? I said Dolph Ziggler was in the Team Barrett versus.
I think he's wrestling twice.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
Oh.
I think, yeah.
I just clued into that for the first time.
Yeah, so it's going to be Ziggler and Morrison for the United States title. Again, another feud that's really only progressed in the previous 2 weeks.
Yeah, and one interesting note about this match then would be the fact that Zack Ryder had his petition for a U.S. title match denied by John Laurinaitis, and John Morrison has been put into this match because he beat Dolph Ziggler on Raw.
So let me get this straight. You lose for 3 months straight, win one match, and then you get a title shot? Is that how it works?
I guess so. And that's part of the argument that Zack Ryder has. I think he'll play a factor into this match. How? I don't know. But there is something to this whole storyline. So who do you think takes this one then?
I think Dolph Ziggler is going to retain.
I don't think there's any way Dolph Ziggler loses anytime soon. If he does, it's for a storyline. It's not to lose the belt.
I really can't see them putting the strap on Morrison.
No. Okay, so those are our Survivor Series predictions. Anything else you want to say about Survivor Series?
Not really, other than the fact that, I think a lot of people are just tuning in to see The Rock in his wrestling tights.
I think that's what they're banking on. You're paying $50 to see one guy. Let's see how that works.
Well, hey, it's sold out MSG.
Yeah, it's true. Okay, let's get to our poll question.
The poll question. Log on to facebook.com/smacktalkradio and cast your vote.
All right, everybody. Tonight's poll question is, what are the chances that John Cena turns heel this Sunday at the Survivor Series? Your choices are A, it's definitely going to happen. B, it's possible, but if he's going to turn heel, it won't be at Survivor Series. Or C, absolutely will not happen because The Rock is turning heel and reforming the Nation of Domination.
You want to take part? Log on to facebook.com/smacktalkradio and cast your vote. Now, James, this is a very interesting one for me because do I think that John Cena is going to turn heel this Sunday? No, I don't. Do I think he turns heel at some time down the road before WrestleMania? No, I don't think that either. But here's the X factor in this situation. There is no way that John Cena gets cheered more than The Rock from any point from here until WrestleMania. And the other aspect is John Cena is going to get booed out of the building completely at WrestleMania.
Oh.
So why not turn him heel?
Well, why don't they do something with him like they did with Shawn Michaels back in 2005? Remember when he was facing Hulk Hogan there in the summertime?
Which would be...
Michaels just turned heel for about a month just so they could build up his program with Hogan. And then right after him and Hogan had his match, he went right back to being a babyface again.
The only reason I don't see that happening is because I think the day that Cena turns heel, it's going to be a big turning point in the industry. Kind of like when Hulk Hogan did it.
Yeah, I can see that.
And I can't see them doing it just for a month.
You know what? With the way that the WWE writes things, I could totally see it.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay. Well, I think it remains to be seen. I'm going with no, he doesn't turn heel.
You know, there's going to be some sort of swerve at the end of the match. That's all we know.
Okay, well, we got to take a quick commercial break. But when we come back, we are going to be heading south. Well, this will be later in the show, but we're heading south as we're going to chat with the owner of Salem, Oregon's West Coast Wrestling Connection. His name is Jeff Manning.
Also, in tonight's top five, we're going to be bringing to you the top five best Survivor Series moments.
And coming up next, we continue our Survivor Series coverage with the host of the TV show and radio program Aftermath. His name is Art O'Kell.
This is Smack Talk Radio Live.
Of the
listening to Smack Talk Radio Live.
All right, welcome back to Smack Talk Radio Live. James, I'm very excited right now because we have a very special guest coming up on the show. And I want to continue on with our Survivor Series coverage. It seems a little extensive tonight, doesn't it?
Well, it's one of the big four, so.
But I figured why not. So.
Sure.
Okay, joining us on the line, his name, well, before we get to his name, he is the host of the radio and TV program Aftermath. His name is Arda Okal, and we are very lucky to have him here. Arda, are you with us, buddy?
Guys, thank you very much for having me on your show. How are you guys?
Oh, not too bad. How are you doing?
Doing very good, my man. I'm 3 hours ahead from you guys, but I'm still kicking.
Yeah.
It's only 12:42 where I am. It's all good.
I know. It's very late over there on the East Coast, and I appreciate you taking the time to join us tonight. It's a big deal to have you on our program, so before we get going, I got to say thank you.
We really appreciate it.
Hey, man. I'm happy to be on the show.
Okay, so before we get into everything here, we want to talk Survivor Series with you, but one thing we wanted to ask you was, well, first of all, our show is based out of Vancouver. Have you ever been to Vancouver before?
A few times, actually. Believe it or not, I haven't always been full-time in broadcasting. Before I started with The Score, and before that, Rogers Television, I worked a normal desk job in project management, and I had a lot of clients. The head office was based in Vancouver, so I would travel to Vancouver often. I did the Grouse Grind once. I can proudly say that I've climbed that mountain, and it took me like 3 hours to do it because I took a lot of breaks, but I did it. So, but I love the city of Vancouver, and I actually got to check out a Canucks game while I was there, and the atmosphere was cool, and yeah, I love the city, man. It's great. Better weather than Toronto, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, that might be true. Now, I am setting this up for something, and my next question will lead into it. Now, you have a background with independent wrestling. For the folks out here who don't know what that is, could you fill us in on what your background is and what your connection is with independent wrestling?
Sure. I know that Vancouver has a really good scene. I think Scotty Mack is out there with Extreme Canadian Championship Wrestling. I do a similar thing in Toronto. So, pretty much, I mean, every province in Canada will have their own independent wrestling territory. It's kind of like, I guess, the OHL to the NHL, or maybe a mix of the OHL and the AHL if you follow hockey, where the up-and-comers will hone their craft and basically develop themselves to the point where the WWE or TNA or ROH may give them a look. We have what we call Maximum Pro Wrestling, which is a merger of two organizations. Basically, if you remember Scott D'Amore, the coach who used to work with TNA,
yep.
He had an organization called Border City Wrestling based out of Windsor where he lives. And we used to have an organization called BSE, Big Star Entertainment, in the Greater Toronto area. And Scott left TNA and he contacted us and said, hey, why don't we merge our efforts? And we said, absolutely. You're very important, a legend in the business, so we would love to partner up with you. And that's what we did, and we've done shows all across Ontario. We've gone to Northern Ontario. We did a cross-Canada tour once. We didn't get as far as Vancouver. We got as far as about the border to Saskatchewan and Alberta. It's about Swift Current. And then we've been to Iqaluit Nunavut 3 times, which is up in the Canadian Arctic, which if you've ever been there, is a complete shock, especially to Canadians. Like if you go up there, it's like, my goodness, it's impressive that Iqaluit's part of Canada. Like just to look at it, it's completely aesthetically different than Vancouver or Toronto. So
yeah.
But basically, just to explain what independent wrestling is, it's just basically like, you know, the breeding ground. You'll see a lot of former WWE names or TNA names or whatnot, but you'll see a lot of up and comers. And we have a school called Square Circle Training, and the likes of Gail Kim, who just re-signed with TNA, has graduated from there. Angelina Love, Taylor Wilde, Kizarni, who's also Sin, Michael Elgin, who's in ROH right now. Those are just among some names that have graduated from Square Circle.
Now, my previous two questions are leading up to this. You obviously have a strong connection in the independent scene. Have you ever, or do you ever hear anything about wrestling in the Pacific Northwest through the independent scene? Like, is there a reputation that wrestling out here has, or is it considered, you know, is it considered a good move to wrestle or to get asked to wrestle in Vancouver or in the Pacific Northwest? Do you ever hear anything about that?
I never hear in terms of reputation. I know that there's a lot of, I mean, the biggest thing that people ask me about is whether they should go and seek booking somewhere. I mean, I'm a big proponent of making sure you wrestle in as many areas as possible, simply because I want my guys or people who I'm trying to support to get as much experience as possible. And, you know, whether we're all Canadians or not, it's going to be a different feel in front of a crowd in Vancouver. It'll probably be a different feel in a crowd in Vancouver versus Kelowna versus Victoria, right? Like, I mean, it'll just be a different crowd. I mean, it's a different crowd in downtown Toronto versus Mississauga versus Brampton versus Timmins, which is 8 hours north. So, I mean, no matter what city you're in, there's going to be a different feel of the crowd, and I really want my guys to really experience that. So if they ever ask me, hey, you know, where should I go? Vancouver would certainly be on that list. I mean, there's a lot of good independent wrestling out there. I've heard great things about ECCW, for example, and Scotty Mack, who's a great guy I've talked to many times. So, I mean, there's definitely a lot in Western Canada. Of course, Lance Storm has a school in Calgary. So, I mean, there's a lot of great independent wrestling. In terms of any sort of reputation, I haven't heard any negative or, I mean, I haven't seen too much of ECCW myself, but I'm sure that I'll get my hands on the tape someday.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I just thought I'd ask, because it's always a question I throw to people who aren't from the area, just to see if people do hear anything about it. But
well, the thing is, the big thing is, I mean, I also tell my guys, a big thing is if you really want to capture, like if you really want to work for a major organization, you're also going to have to try your best to get outside of Canada, period.
Yeah.
And, like, luckily for people in Vancouver, I mean, you have Seattle and Washington State there, and I guess Portland. Like, I mean, there's things within, like, an eight-hour driving distance that have, like, wrestling shows, et cetera. And in Toronto, I mean, you can go to, New York State and you know, wherever else is within an eight-hour drive. I mean, I often urge my guys to get as many bookings in the States as possible, even if it's, like, an eight-hour drive, or if you're not going to, you know, break even on it, you know, so be it. You got to get that experience because it's going to pay off in the end.
Mm-hmm. All right. Fair enough. Let's move on. We want to talk Survivor Series, WWE with you. I'm just going to start it off real simple. How did you feel about The Rock's return on Monday?
Well, The Rock really showed that his promo skills are beyond anything that we're seeing right now in the WWE. The way I explained it on Aftermath on Tuesday was, The Rock delivered a promo about his day better than any WWE superstar on the roster would deliver on their best day. And, I mean, it just goes to show the different caliber that The Rock is at. I mean, and he always was. I mean, he's a very special, gifted athlete on the microphone, and I'm sure everyone is pretty clear on that. And it's just, I mean, the thing is that we get upset that he's not there every week, or some people do. I personally don't. I like the fact that he's not there every week, because it makes it even more special when he does. And it just reminds you every time he returns. Even his video interviews aren't the best, but they're still among the best that we're seeing in the WWE today. So, I mean, listen, the numbers don't lie, man. Like, he sold out. Like, he was the big reason, if not the reason, Survivor Series sold out in 90 minutes. He is the big reason, if not the reason, you have the biggest first-day ticket sales in the history of WrestleMania, beating WrestleMania 25 by over $1 million in the first day. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So The Rock is a catalyst for all the big success. And, I mean, look at the number for Monday Night Raw for the ratings in the States. I think it was a 3.4, which is something they haven't hit in quite a while. So
you have to
give The Rock his due.
Is there a cause for concern that no one on the active roster today can seem to keep up with someone like The Rock, though?
I think that The Rock's presence will be a wake-up call for a lot of people to say, you know what, I think that this is where the bar used to be. I mean, maybe in the last few years that was forgotten by some superstars. Maybe it has to do with the rigidity of their speech and whatever, but I mean, this is a wake-up call. With The Rock having the freedom that he does, I think a lot of people are going to say, you know what, maybe there's a time for a shift here. But I will have to say this, too. I think John Cena is holding his own. When John Cena is allowed to be free and interact with The Rock, he's holding his own. He's definitely a benefactor in this situation, because unless The Rock is coming back to a normal schedule, I just don't see The Rock winning at WrestleMania. Because it would be like Hulk Hogan winning at WrestleMania 18.
Yeah.
So I feel that John Cena has an opportunity here to elevate himself. And you know what? He did fine on Raw too. I mean, The Rock had his trending topics joke, and John Cena fired back. And in those moments, John Cena feels like he is in that league.
So what do you think of the setup heading into this main event, like the way that they've booked The Miz and R-Truth?
Well, I think The Miz and R-Truth are kind of non-existent. It's funny, I was just watching the Stone Cold Steve Austin DVD that WWE is about to release, and I don't want to give away too much because it's a great DVD, but Chris Jericho talks about how in the WrestleMania 14 build-up, the matchup was Steve Austin versus Shawn Michaels, but the real rivalry or what people cared about the most was Steve Austin versus Mike Tyson. And it's kind of a similar situation here. I mean, everybody cares about John Cena versus The Rock, and The Miz and R-Truth are really accessories in this entire project. And at the Survivor Series, I mean, hey, it wouldn't be too shocking to me if The Miz and R-Truth were to win, because I guess it would make sense in the sense that here's their shine or their rub. And at the same time, it doesn't hurt John Cena and The Rock because, well, hey, I guess they couldn't get along. And the way I would end the Survivor Series, honestly, is them brawling around the arena for like 10 minutes. That's how I would end the Survivor Series, having them go all the way around MSG, through the crowd, in the back, everywhere.
Do you feel that the way that The Miz and R-Truth have been booked going into this thing is doing more harm to their careers than helping them?
Not necessarily, only because they are involved in a very important match that everybody cares about, and I think that if they do come out victorious in it, it will make them look good to new eyeballs. I think that they're winning a lot of points within the company because they are doing what they have to do. I mean, they're playing the part the way they need to play, and honestly, I think they don't need to do anymore because the focus really isn't them, and I think they understand that. Whether it sucks or not, in their personal opinion, is not relevant, but it's not what matters. I think what matters is they understand that they need to help further The Rock and John Cena because it's the money match going into WrestleMania.
Are you a fan of waiting for The Rock to get into the ring until WrestleMania, or do you think that he needed to get into a match at Survivor Series to sell this pay-per-view?
That's a good question. I'm a fan of The Rock getting into the ring at the Survivor Series in a tag team match. I would not have been a fan of The Rock getting into the ring at Survivor Series in a singles match. In fact, I would not put The Rock in a singles match before WrestleMania. I think that the idea of a singles match should be saved for when it actually happens at WrestleMania. So if that were to happen on Raw or something, I would feel that, yes, in that case, it might be wasted.
I got to say, Ardo, when I saw The Rock initially turn down John Cena's offer on that video message on Monday Night Raw, when he turned down Cena's offer and then he eventually did accept it, I was actually legitimately surprised that he had turned down the offer from John Cena to be a tag team. And I was actually, the wheels started turning in my head, and I actually would have liked to have seen The Rock flat out turn down John Cena, and almost as we head into Survivor Series, not really know what was going to happen. I mean, I know that seems a bit ridiculous to not know what the main event is as you go into a pay-per-view, but I don't know, I thought it was kind of a good idea to have him shut John Cena down altogether.
Or maybe have like a on that Boston show, have The Rock answer or something like that. Yeah, I mean, the one thing I will say, though, is that his explanation did make sense. I like that his explanation was, I'm not doing this for you, I'm not doing this for me, I'm doing this for the people. I mean, it kept him babyface, right? Because people like the idea that he's doing something for them. And also, it makes sense because he doesn't like John Cena, so he's not teaming with him because he wants to team with him. He's teaming with him because the people want him to team with him. So at least it made sense from that standpoint, and I actually like the explanation.
All right, fair enough. Now, I have a question I wanted to ask you. This is my own personal opinion, but I am beginning to think that this entire reason why The Rock has come back to face John Cena at WrestleMania eventually is to gain a boatload of more Twitter fans and Facebook followers. And I feel that this entire storyline is all about social media. Would you agree?
I can see that there is a huge interest in social media by the WWE lately. I'm not sure if that coincides directly with The Rock returning. I think that it may be a coincidence that the WWE's interest in social media has hit a peak, or the interest has grown as The Rock was coming in. I mean, there's no doubt at all that, I mean, even in The Rock's monologue, he was like, boots to asses is going to trend, and then Cena's lady parts is going to trend, and then Cena said something like, John Cena beats up The Rock, or whatever he said is going to trend. I mean, it's obvious that, I mean, even before that, anal bleeding, perfect example. I mean, you have to think that that was the only reason that was said on Raw was so that anal bleeding could trend on Twitter. And to me, I think that's pretty clever, because if somebody who never watches wrestling looks at their worldwide trending topics and they see anal bleeding, chances are they're going to click on it because they're going to be curious as to what that is.
Okay, well, let me put it this way to you. You are someone who is very active on Facebook and Twitter, and you know, you are promoting your shows and yourself, and I definitely appreciate that. But at what point does all that translate into dollars, and where is this going to translate into dollars with the WWE?
In terms of social media in general, or
well,
with The Rock?
I mean, it's one thing to have a million followers on your Twitter, but that's not generating you any money. Like, where are they going with this? What is the purpose of advertising Twitter so much? Because I don't think that adding all these people to Twitter and Facebook is translating into dollars. Am I wrong?
Well, I think to preserve interest, I think the WWE has this idea that they want to be in the minds of the WWE Universe 24/7. I mean, I'll give you two examples. When CM Punk left the WWE with the championship, I would bet that so many fans were glued to each Twitter account, the WWE's Twitter account, CM Punk's Twitter account, waiting for his next move. And I still say to this day, if SummerSlam wasn't the next big pay-per-view, CM Punk would have been gone for a longer time. Just the SummerSlam, unfortunately, well, not unfortunately, but SummerSlam has a big payday attached to it because it's a top three pay-per-view. So if that pay-per-view wasn't around the corner, it would be, I would strongly believe that CM Punk would have been out of the WWE and doing these kind of random appearances for a very long time, or maybe at least longer. But anyway, people were glued to Twitter at that time, and I think that that was a perfect use of social media and online videos, etc. And another example is Zack Ryder. I mean, Zack Ryder eventually is going to make money for the WWE, and if he's not already, I mean, with his broski headband and his merchandise, is making a lot of money for the WWE right now. And I think that that all began with social media and his rallying cry, like his battle cry for attention. And I think that the WWE is noticing that, not directly from Twitter. I mean, I'm not sure how the WWE would make profit off of their own Twitter account, but I think that it could be used as a vessel to make money.
Okay, so on Monday Night Raw this week, we counted 22 Facebook and Twitter mentions. Is that too much, or is that a good thing? Is that a good move by the WWE, I should say?
That's almost one Twitter mention every 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Right. I think that name keys shouldn't be included, because I think everybody on Aftermath, we put our name keys with Twitter accounts, and the UFC does it. I mean, everybody puts their Twitter accounts on their name keys, so I wouldn't count those. I don't know if you did or not. I'm just saying, I think those shouldn't count, because that's just standard practice now. I think what was annoying was they don't use this. WWE doesn't use this anymore, but that now trending graphic, that was annoying, in my opinion. I think that was a little bit invasive, but it's not being used anymore. I think that I find that the level that they're saying that Twitter is being used right now, I think that's going to become commonplace. I think that eventually people are just going to accept it. And if they already haven't, I think that it's going to stick around for a very long time, as long as it's a hot topic in the WWE locker room. And I think that if the rumors are true and Vince McMahon gets himself a Twitter account, I think that it's going to be a very I think it's going to be more interesting to read comments to him than his comments.
I would definitely agree with you. Okay, we got to wrap this up, unfortunately, because we're running way over time. Tell us what you're up to these days.
Well, I mean, I have Aftermath going on. I'm very proud of it. It's my baby. I helped. I came up with the idea. I'm very proud of it. It's been up since December of 2009 on the Sports Network, and you can watch it every Tuesday at 6 Eastern and Friday at 10 Eastern. We have a new blog, an Aftermath blog that you can check out at blogs.thescore.com/WWE. We write about pretty much everything. I just posted a post actually now about the history of the Survivor Series traditional matchup and why the perception is there that it may have lost some prestige over the years, and some suggestions as to how that prestige could be revitalized. And we have the Aftermath audio show with myself and Jimmy Corderas, who's a former WWE referee. That airs Mondays at 11:20 on the website right after Raw. So yeah, and by the way, on thescore.com, if you happen to miss Raw in Canada or SmackDown, we post video full episodes now on thescore.com/WWE, so you can check that out. Too.
All right, Ardo Ocal, thank you very much for coming on our show, man.
We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me. You can call me anytime.
Okay, appreciate that. Ardo Ocal, we'll talk to you soon, buddy.
Take care.
Okay. There you go, James.
Fantastic. Ardo Ocal. Fantastic.
That was very good. You know what? It's interesting to talk to someone about social media and the WWE, because he is someone who does it quite often himself. So he's very prominent on Facebook and Twitter.
He really knows his stuff.
Yeah, so I wanted to ask him about that, because it's funny, because he's saying that it's here to stay, get used to it, and I'm saying I'm already annoyed by it.
I mean, that's I'm counting the plugs that they do on the graphic plugs that they do.
Yeah.
I mean, but what do we count? 22, 23 times? That's like one every 10 minutes. I don't know. To me, that's just ramming it down our throats a little bit too much.
But we are also not the businessmen like those, WWE and Art is. I mean, he has a huge following on Facebook and Twitter, and there's got to be a reason for it.
I know. I understand the reasoning, but it's just...
I mean, I'm beginning to think if we should sign up for Twitter.
Well, if Vince McMahon gets a Twitter, then yes, I will sign up for it just to read, like he said, just to read other people's tweets.
Okay, why don't we jump into the news of the week, post to post report? What do you think?
Sounds good to me. Let's roll. All
right, here we go.
Catching you up with the business of the business. It's time for the post to post report.
All right, the post-to-post report, catching you up on the business
of the business.
Let's get right into it, James. The post-to-post this week... Jeez, that's how I'm starting it. I'm just going to screw it up right off the top. We're starting off with a WWE diva I know you wish never left the WWE, James. Her name is Chyna. Remember her?
Jeez, Chyna, why'd you leave?
Well, she started a campaign in the past week to try and be brought back to television. She claims that when she was let go in 2001, she thought that the WWE understood what was happening. They had thought she had quit. She claims a contract that she wasn't happy with was up, and that in the end, the WWE let her go, and she hasn't heard from him since. She claims to have reached out to Vince McMahon many times in the past, but most recently before Vivid Entertainment offered her a deal. She wants to see if she can be brought back one more time to an organization she claims to have paved the way for the current divas. Now, in a video message posted to YouTube, she wonders why they have accepted all these other people back, such as Hogan, Ric Flair, Bret Hart, but why not her? When asked who she would like to go face to face with if she did return to the WWE, Chyna said she'd like to wrestle the biggest diva in the WWE, Vince McMahon.
What a match that would be, Chyna versus Vince McMahon.
This is a simple answer to me. I'm sorry, you did a sex tape, you're done. You're not coming back to the WWE after you've done a sex tape. It's a simple end to a career.
And why would you say that?
Well, it's a PG show. I mean, there's no way they're bringing her back. I think it's a crazy move, but that's just me.
All right. Well, Goldust has been campaigning for a match at WrestleMania against none other than his brother of all people. Dustin Runnels, who currently works behind the scenes of WWE as a producer and trainer, has begun campaigning on Twitter for a match against Cody Rhodes at WrestleMania 28. He wrote, "With your voices heard to WWE, Goldust versus Cody at WrestleMania 28, IC title versus career."
Ken Doan, better known to the WWE universe as Kenny Dykstra, wrestled in a dark match, losing to Justin Gabriel at Tuesday's SmackDown tapings. At the end of the evening, Doan wrote the following on Twitter, "Great feedback from everyone. Except the guy that hires people. What you gonna do? Maybe he plays hard to get? It is what it is."
While it's just a rumor at this point, I thought it might be worth mentioning. With the NBA season up in the air, rumors have been speculating about trying to bring a big-name NBA star to work an angle at WrestleMania 28 next year. In recent years, WWE officials have expressed interest in using either Shaquille O'Neal or LeBron James.
Bobby Lashley, who just won his MMA fight against Carl Noth and captured the Shark Fights Texas Heavyweight Championship, has been signed to return to pro wrestling. Lashley will face TNA star Rob Terry at the Family Wrestling Entertainment Show on December 17th in New York. Also announced for the show is Charlie Haas versus Eric Young and Jackie Gaeta Haas versus Winter. Maria Kanellis has also announced that she'll be making her in-ring return for the same promotion February 25th of next year.
All right, a little bit of a sad news this week, Corey, as James Harris, better known to us as Kamala, had to have his leg amputated due to complications related to high blood pressure and diabetes. Kamala recently sent a video to TMZ thanking his fans for the support and was in good spirits, saying he had just lost a leg and not his life. This would likely signal the end of a 37-year wrestling career for the Ugandan giant.
Finally, Herb Gerwig, the legendary wrestler known as Killer Carl Cox, a headliner in the 60s and 70s, passed away at the age of 80 last Thursday due to a heart attack. Herb Gerwig was currently in the hospital already for a previous heart attack he had suffered in October. The Cauliflower Alley Club released a statement saying Cox wrestled all over the world and was a huge star in Australia, feuding with the likes of Spiros Arion, Mark Lewin, and others. Stateside, he held many titles, including the NWA National, Central States, Florida, and Georgia championships. Sad loss there. Let's get right into the financials, James. I feel like we got to rush along because we're already way behind. Current stock price, $9.67 a share. That's down from last week's, which was $10.66 a share at this time.
A whole dollar. That's huge.
Now here's some interesting news. The ratings for the past Monday Night Raw, which of course featured The Rock's return, it scored a 3.25 rating for all 3 hours and a 3.37 rating in the standard 2 hour block. The 3.37 rating is the highest since May 23rd, which was the Raw after Randy Savage's death. Now Raw averaged 4.74 million viewers for all 3 hours, 4.9 million for the standard 2 hours, 4.31 in the first, 5 million in the standard first, and 4.91 in the final hour. I know it's a lot of numbers, but the point being here, James, is that this marks the ninth week out of the past 12 where Raw's final hour has dropped from the standard first hour. This being said, though, this week's second hour averaged the most viewers in 16 weeks, dating back to the July 25th episode. Now, on cable TV Monday, Raw ranked number 2 behind what else? Monday Night Football. And I just wanted to quickly throw some attendance numbers for the WWE's recent tour over to Europe. The Raw that happened in Newcastle, England, that drew 7,000 fans. The Raw November 9th in Nottingham, England, drew 5,000. The SmackDown in Belgium drew a sellout of 7,000. Raw in Glasgow drew a sellout of 5,200. SmackDown in Zurich did 4,400. London did 15,500. Poland drew 10,500. Minehead, England drew 5,200 fans, and in Frankfurt, Germany, that drew 5,000 fans. I'd say overall, pretty strong showing for the WWE over in Europe.
That's decent.
Yeah. Well, that is the post-to-post report this week.
That was a good post-to-post report.
And I'm more excited about what's coming up here. We get to speak with Jeff Manning.
Well, you thought our first interview was good. We got another action-packed one coming up for you here.
All right. Why don't you give us a quick rundown of what's happening on the show there, James?
Well, we're going to have in our local wrestling scene, like you just said, Jeff Manning coming up next. And as always, in our top five, we're going to have the top five best Survivor Series moments.
This is Smack Talk Radio Live.
The local wrestling scene, bringing you up to date with the promotions all over the Pacific Northwest.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. This is Smack Talk Radio Live, and this is our local wrestling scene. And tonight, a little bit of an oxymoron, we're going international in our local wrestling scene. We're going to be talking to none other than Jeff Manning from the West Coast Wrestling Connection, based out of Salem, Oregon. Should be pretty good. I'm excited to hear what he has to say.
One thing I definitely, one thing that interests me about the West Coast Wrestling Connection is the amount of wrestlers from the Vancouver area that actually head down to Salem, Oregon. So let's bring Jeff Manning on the line. Jeff, are you there, buddy?
I'm here.
Okay, how you doing tonight? Can you hear me all right?
I can hear you fine. Is this live or Memorex? Are you just talking to me off the air, or what are we doing here?
Yeah, no, we are live. We are live on the show right now.
Oh, that's... well, then I'll have to talk like we're live on the air. Disregard those first unacceptable comments from a former radio man.
No
My
worries.
Humble apologies.
No worries. All right, so you are the owner and promoter of the West Coast Wrestling Connection in Salem, Oregon. Now, we are up here in Vancouver, obviously. Now, for the people in Vancouver area who have never heard about the West Coast Wrestling Connection, could you fill us in on what exactly your organization is all about?
What do you mean nobody knows about it up there, for heaven's sakes? I've used many of the guys up there. Mike Dempsey comes to mind, Cole Bishop. Michelle Starr is coming down this weekend with a couple of folks. We must be known by somebody.
I'm speaking more in terms of the fans who aren't wrestlers themselves.
Okay. Well, we opened up just about 7 years ago. We weren't sure what to name our organization, but wanted something generic in case we do shows up and down the coast. A lot of our guys work in California. A lot of them work in Washington. We bring people from all over the West Coast and across the country. We even had somebody from Sweden work with us. And, of course, a lot of you Canucks up there. We'd love to have you guys come down here.
Now, what is the local wrestling scene in Oregon like these days?
I was really afraid you were going to ask that question. For all the wrestling fans who obviously know about WWE and TNA, and some even know about Ring of Honor, for the rest of us, what they call the independent wrestling scene. And indie wrestling, in my view, in the last 2 or 3 years, has really taken a downward spiral as far as fans, number of fans attending, and just a lot of people that really shouldn't be wrestling in the ring for lack of training being in the ring. Then there's the unfortunate part of the politics that plays a kind of a dirty role. A lot of politics in Oregon and Washington. I know you've had some up in your neck of the woods. But in many ways, a lot of the fun has gone out of it for some of us. We've been doing this for 20-plus years. But we still keep plugging away. And we keep hoping that the politics will go away and that Vince and company WWE will also show a turnaround, and it will kind of bleed over to the small indies like us.
Are you personally still having fun doing what you're doing? Because I got to admit, Jeff, you don't sound like you're extremely happy about being involved with independent wrestling.
Well, you called me a 10:30 night for everything, so what do you expect?
I apologize
just
for that.
Kidding. No, that's not a problem. No, I do enjoy it. I think it's the between-the-show part that I don't like. Setting up, trying to get people booked on shows, people canceling, again, the politics. But once the show begins, and after 20 years of doing it, there's still something about a show that just makes it all worthwhile, I will be honest. When the bell rings, the lights go on, we go through the curtains, it's a whole different world. It's entertainment, it's athletics, and it is a lot of fun. But if I could throw out the other 29 days, I would probably be a lot happier. Yeah.
Now, what kind of venues does the West Coast Wrestling Connection wrestle out of? Where are you guys mostly? Are you in Legion Halls? Are you in community gyms? Where exactly do you guys do your shows?
We started in the Legion Halls, the Elks Lodges, those things. We have progressed to a lot of National Guard Army armories. The one we're in right now in Salem does have a capacity of 2,500. Not quite even close to that yet, but it's a great venue for the television, and we keep hoping that we'll grow. We do some high schools, trying to stay away from the bars and the Legion Halls. We're just trying to have a little different atmosphere and approach and attitude for the organization.
And are you guys on television?
We are on community television here in Salem. And we have been negotiating for about 6 months to get on, actually, in Portland on a legitimate network station, and that hasn't happened yet. But we're getting pretty close to that, to be honest. I'm hoping honestly, in the next 4 to 6 months, that will come to pass.
Now, have you had any big names come through your organization, or have you created any big names which have eventually gone on to do, you know, really great things with wrestling?
We have used some of the, I don't know how to phrase this delicately, as many people know, I usually say what I want to say and get in trouble for it later. We have used a few wannabe has-beens, if Ted makes any sense to you, some people that were never maybe huge, but or a semi-name might have been WWE. We've used a Blue Meanie. We've used Steve Corino. Our current visitor that comes every 3 to 4 months is the NWA World Heavyweight Champion, Adam Pearce. We actually had Percy Pringle, that many of you know as Paul Bearer, the Undertaker's manager. He was here last month. He'll be back in March. As far as local people, Aaron Bola, who I believe has worked up at ECCW up in your neck of the woods, started in Washington, but he's been a big star for us. We just try to build our local people and really push the local and regional folks, and again, some of the out-of-state people who are not big names, and just make it all part of the show. We have really found that bringing in a big name or a former was wanted to be a big name isn't going to put butts in seats. And it's just an added expense that the indies don't need. I mean, I have a pretty high payroll for an indie and pretty high overhead. So if I can get a couple hundred people in my venues, there's no profit to be made.
So there definitely isn't any, it's not like it used to be where you could bring in a big name and it would draw a lot more people. Those days are gone. Is that, would you agree with that?
I think they're gone. And I think if you talk to, you know, even Scotty Mack and Michelle Starr up there who both run shows, I don't know whether they would agree on it. I suspect they probably would. Again, Percy Pringle did add some value to our last show, and our numbers were the biggest they've been in about 3 years. So either I was lucky or it's just, David, nothing else was going on. But generally speaking, we bring in people that we just feel, even if they are former semi-stars, people that will fit with our format and have a great attitude and have a lot of talent and will just add to the show, and then people will realize that we just have a good show and continue to come to the show.
Okay, so you had mentioned before that you bring wrestlers from the Vancouver area occasionally down to Salem to work your shows. How has that been for you? Has that been successful? And is that, you know, is that a good, like, do you enjoy doing that? Does it usually pay off for you?
Well, one thing it gives our local guys a chance to work with other people, and the way you get better is to work with other people that you don't work with every month. That's part of it. And again, I think bringing people like Starr or even Dempsey, Cole, a lot of the guys that did come down here and are coming back, again, just because of the talent level and the great attitude, I just think it still adds to what we feel are already pretty good shows. And that, again, is our bottom line, is to put on an entertaining show so the fans will want to come back. The average shows down here, outside of us, there are, I think, 5 or 6 other promotions. Some of them average 30 or 40 fans. One of them averages about 100. We still run anywhere from 150 to 300 on an average. So not where I'd like to be. I want to see 500 plus. But I think we're doing something right, even if some of the guys are unhappy because they don't get to do what they want. But
do you have,
the numbers still speak for themselves.
Do you have a good relationship with those other organizations around you? Do you guys have wrestlers cross, you know, wrestling for other promotions and vice versa? Do the wrestlers bounce back and forth between those 5 promotions in your area?
We are a little different in that we have always wanted to have a different look from everybody else, but we have had a rule in place since day one that some people laugh at, but the guys have been around for a long time understand it. We limit the number of people that can work at other promotions and work for us at the same time. We do, as you want to say, cross-pollinate. We have 7 guys working over at DOA Wrestling out of Portland, 2 or 3 at the others. That 7 is our maximum limit, and we do that again to keep a different look, and I think it benefits all of us to have a different look. But we do again have that 7 that work at both promotions.
Okay, well, you have a show coming up this Sunday, November 20th. Why don't you fill everyone in on what exactly is going down this Sunday?
Okay, it is our annual holiday show. We always run it before Thanksgiving because December shows oftentimes due to weather get canceled. Every other year we seem to have a little ice or snow issue down here. So this is our big holiday show. It's funny because we are doing our version of Survivor Series. We call it Survival Games. And again, Survivor Series happens to be Sunday as well, which I had not realized at the time we booked this. But it's a similar format to what WWE does, but it's different. Conceptually, we have four teams of four. What goes on in the ring is different. You can only tag to your own team. It is a four-way dance in the ring until teams are getting eliminated. And then it could be, you know, four on one team, two on one. One team could be gone. And as we advertise, the winning team gets to share $10,000.
Wow, that sounds pretty cool.
We'll take a collection from the fans in case we're short money on that. beyond that, again, Michelle Starr will be down. He'll be working. One of our guys will be having a tag team championship match. We have what a lot of people call their X division or their junior division. We call the Lightning division, and that title's up for grabs. So it should be a pretty packed show. We'll have, I believe, seven matches, and it's going to be a lot of fun.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but Matt Ecstatic is also wrestling for you this Sunday. Is that right?
Yes, he is. This will be his first time down. I told Star that I needed a couple people of talent. I wanted to have a girl come in if we could find one, and I believe her name is Bambi Hall is also coming in to wrestle the not-so-lovely MJ. Actually, I have to say she is lovely because recently my character had a little change. As the former owner of the WC, I'm playing a role that I played down at NWA Hollywood. I play a low-powered attorney who's pretty sleazy. So I happen to like MJ, even if the fans don't like her. So Bambi's going to have her hands full.
And if people do want to buy tickets for your show, or if they just want to check out the West Coast Wrestling Connection in general, how would they do that?
Couple ways. The website's the easiest. It is undergoing another transformation. I apologize for that. But if you look carefully, you'll find all the information. That is wc-wc.com. Not the word dash, but the punctuation mark dash. So wc-wc.com is the website. They can send email to info@wc-wc.com. They can call this number, which I will give out. It's area 503-851-9980. That is our office number for the West Coast Wrestling Connection. Or they can show up at the venue and buy a ticket.
Okay. Jeff, is there anything else you want to let the fans know before we let you go?
No, except support all your indie wrestling wherever it may be. I know a lot of the wrestlers will moan and groan and promoters moan and groan. We just like to see more people in the shows. If there's something you see at any show that you like, tell the promoter. If there's something you don't like, tell the promoter, because without all the fans out there, we will not have any promotions. That's pretty simple. So even though I do sound negative at times, we love having the fans in there and entertaining them and keeping them coming back. And like I said, just tell your local promoters what you like and don't like, but support as many as you can.
All right, Jeff Manning, thank you very much. I appreciate it. James appreciates it.
Thank you very much, buddy.
We hope to bring you back one day in the future when we get the update on how the West Coast Wrestling Connection is doing.
Feel free to call anytime. It's been a pleasure to be with you guys. Continue to have a great radio show.
Thank you. And the next time I call, I promise it'll be before 10 o'clock at night.
No, you're another Canadian. You're not going to tell the truth. You'll call probably 11:30 next time.
All right, thank you very much, Jeff. Much appreciated.
You bet. Have a great evening. Take care.
You too. Jeff Manning.
Well, it started out a little rocky, but it turned out to be pretty good.
Yeah, no, you know what? It's very interesting because we don't hear about other independent territories, right? And that is the entire reason why we started this segment, was to get some knowledge.
To bring it out there and put it in front of your face, mm-hmm. You know? There's more than just ECCW and ASW out there.
Yeah, and you've heard good things about the West Coast Wrestling Connection.
Oh, I've heard tons of great things.
And a friend of ours, you know, he has wrestled down there.
Yeah, it's Mike Dempsey, right?
Mean Streak Mike Dempsey. So, show this Sunday. It's too bad you and I can't go and check it out.
No, it is unfortunate.
Well, James, we got to take one more break.
But coming up next on the show, it's our top five, and it is the top five best Survivor Series moments.
This is Smack Talk Radio Live. Everybody was in it. Miles around, out at the speedway, some kind of Elvis thing. Well, I ain't no movie star, but I can get behind anything.
Yeah, I can get behind anything. Get it out, get it all out. Yeah, stretch that thing. Make it last, least till the shop bell rings. Well, taxi driver, life till the rhythm, never like stop. Throws a passion, throws a passion in some just threw him off.
You're listening to Smack Talk Radio Live. Helping you remember what most of us couldn't. Tonight's top five.
All right, welcome back to a very much longer than usual edition of Smack Talk Radio Live. It's just the way it is tonight, James.
You know what? There's going to be some weeks it's just like that, you know?
But you know what? I got to say, so far it's been very informative. I mean, our two interviews tonight were excellent. I'm not really ashamed that our show has gone this long. I mean, I know we try and aim for an hour every week, but this is a rare circumstance, and we're going with it.
There you go.
The top five Survivor Series moments. We're going to start it off number five, the debut of The Rock from Survivor Series 1996. Who would have thought that this young guy full of energy would go on to become one of the greatest WWE superstars of all time? Of course, he didn't debut as The Rock. In his initial match, he was simply known as Rocky Maivia, and his nickname was The Blue Chipper.
With arm tassels and all.
He was the sole survivor of his 4-on-4 elimination match. He eliminated Crush with a crossbody and Goldust with a shoulder breaker. In the growing months, fans became sick of his clean-cut, good guy persona, so he turned heel and joined the Nation of Domination.
Good move.
You knew the WWE saw something in him with the amount of hype he received from Vince McMahon and Jim Ross, but they probably didn't see that The Rock, well, they didn't see The Rock taking the path that he did.
Keep in mind, that happened at Madison Square Garden, which, coincidentally, is where Survivor Series is taking place this Sunday.
There you go.
Let's go to number four, Diesel's babyface turn. Now, this turned out to be a pretty big deal in the long run, as it began the launch of the singles career of Kevin Nash. Nash, at the time known as Diesel, had been the bodyguard for Shawn Michaels for almost a year at this point. He started wrestling over the summer and even captured the Intercontinental Championship. Now, fans started to get behind him because he looked real cool and he pretty much dominated all of his opponents. Nash's jackknife powerbomb was one of the best finishers around at the time. Now, Diesel had been growing tired of Shawn Michaels' antics for a bit, and he finally snapped at the Survivor Series. He slowly stalked down Shawn Michaels before Michaels eventually left the arena, and less than 2 weeks later, Diesel won the WWF Championship from Bob Backlund, and that was a match that lasted only about 8 seconds. Now, Diesel held on to that title for over a year, Corey, something you won't see nowadays.
No.
He defended it successfully against the likes of Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels, Psycho Sid, and Mabel before losing it to Bret Hart in late 1995. Now, this was an important event because, as I said, it marked the beginning of Nash's successful singles run, which then garnered him a huge contract from WCW, and it allowed the whole NWO angle to begin, basically.
Number three, The Undertaker wins the WWF Championship at Survivor Series 1991. For anybody who doesn't know, Hulk Hogan rarely, if ever, lost in the 80s and 90s, and the only time he ever lost was the Ultimate Warrior at WrestleMania 6. Hogan lost to Andre the Giant on the debut episode of the main event, but that was with the help of a crooked referee. The Undertaker was an unstoppable force in the WWF at the time. He was going through babyface undercard wrestlers with ease. He soundly defeated Jimmy Snuka at WrestleMania 7, and at Survivor Series, exactly 1 year after his debut, he challenged Hulk Hogan for the WWF title. Although it came with the help of Ric Flair, Undertaker defeated Hogan to win the title. The crowd was stunned. There lied the hero in the middle of the ring, having just been beaten for the WWF title. Undertaker did lose the title 6 days later, but it was still quite shocking at the time to see Hogan lose.
That was quite huge, actually, back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be like seeing somebody like Goldberg lose a match as his streak was going on.
Yeah, Hogan never lost.
It was unbelievable. Well, that brings us to number two. Shawn Michaels wins the first ever Elimination Chamber match and becomes World Heavyweight Champion. Now, this happened at Survivor Series 2002. Now, you know, I'm glad, Corey, that this year's Survivor Series is at Madison Square Garden, because as you can tell from this list, good things happen at Survivor Series at MSG. Now, in 2002, Eric Bischoff debuted the ominous Elimination Chamber. Triple H defended the world title in the chamber against Booker T, Rob Van Dam, Kane, Chris Jericho, and Shawn Michaels. Now, Michaels had just returned from a four-year absence due to a back injury. He had just defeated Triple H in an excellent match at SummerSlam, and in the Elimination Chamber, HBK was the ultimate underdog who the crowd was firmly behind. Now, many fans were upset that Triple H had just been handed the world title by Eric Bischoff, so they were extremely anxious to see him lose it. Now, the reaction that Michaels got after winning the match was just great. You could tell Michaels was real grateful for the opportunity and thankful for the fans' reactions. This match continues HBK's comeback and showed it. He still had it, man.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Definitely.
All right. This would bring us to number one.
Look at that!
Undertaker on 325 pounds. Look at that! He just got nailed with a tombstone. Awesome is the only word I can think to describe this Undertaker.
Well, there you have it. Our number one Survivor Series moment is the arrival of the Dead Man, and of course, this happened at Survivor Series 1990. Now, back in the 1990s, the WWF was all about the character and gimmick. I mean, look at guys like Hulk Hogan, Ultimate Warrior, and Ted DiBiase. Now, when The Undertaker walked down the aisle to the ring, fans were just in awe of his presence. I mean, here was this dark, ominous-looking man walking towards the ring with no emotion and no expression on his face whatsoever. Sure, he fit in at the time, but I doubt that many people thought that The Undertaker character would go on to have the impact that it did in the WWE. I mean, 20 years later, Corey, and The Undertaker's legacy, it speaks for itself. He's undefeated at WrestleMania, he's won the WWE and world title multiple times, the mere presence of him in the ring captivates fans, and his entrance has got to be one of the best ever, if not the best ever. Now, I doubt many people saw this coming in 1990, but The Undertaker has become a legacy of his own in the WWE.
It was from that day on that the legacy of The Undertaker was born, and I would say we've all got our money's worth. With that guy.
More than got our money's worth.
Yeah. Top five Survivor Series moments. Now, here's a question for you, James.
What's that?
Will any of these moments be topped this Sunday at Survivor Series?
Probably not. But, again, who knows? It's Survivor Series. It's at MSG. Before we head in, though, there's a couple honorable mentions there for the list. There was also the end of the invasion angle that happened. There was the infamous Montreal Screwjob. We won't get into that.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
There's lots of cool moments that have happened at Survivor Series.
But you're not thinking any of them are going to be topped by this Sunday?
Well, it's going to be pretty damn tough. That's all I'm going to say.
No kidding. Well, here's a question. Are we going to be left disappointed, or are we going to be coming back here on Monday thinking that was a damn good pay-per-view?
I'm honestly leaning towards disappointed, because that's just the way things have been going lately.
Yes. Although we were pretty positive on Monday, I thought.
Please prove me wrong.
Oh,
WWE.
I agree.
Please prove me wrong.
I hope they're proving me wrong. They better come up with something good.
Something very good.
Yeah. Okay, before we get out of here, James, I just want to quickly go over the poll question. We asked the audience viewer, which is you guys, what are the chances that John Cena turns heel this Sunday at Survivor Series? It was pretty even, actually. But 46% of you are saying, absolutely, will not happen. Rock's turning heel.
Really?
I'm not agreeing with that.
Holy.
It was split down the middle between definitely going to happen and it's possible.
Yeah.
But, you know. Okay, this will wrap it up. A very long and extended edition of Smack Talk Radio Live. But on next week's show, James, Survivor Series, well, it's going to have come and gone.
Yep.
We're going to dissect what could be a great pay-per-view, or could be a bad one. We'll see how that goes.
We'll also talk local wrestling and preview two of ECCW's upcoming shows, the Extreme Rumble and Wrestling with Hunger, taking place in Port Coquitlam. And they're both happening next weekend.
My name is Corey Callahan. This has been Smack Talk Radio Live on a Thursday evening. We, of course, are back Monday for SRL on a Monday night.
My name's James McDonald, and hey, thanks for listening. We'll see you Monday.
All right, Smack Talk Radio Live.